You're listening to Midori House, first broadcast on the 9th of November 2016 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Midori House, coming to you live from Studio One here in London. I'm Andrew Muller. On today's show,
I will be president for all Americans, and this is so important to me.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time. Donald Trump is going to be our president.
Not for the first time in 2016, the thing that could obviously never happen has happened. In a special program, my guests Michael Goldfarb and Tom Rivers will be trying to figure out how and why. Also ahead.
I really didn't think Donald Trump was going to win, but at the same time, even if Hillary won, I wasn't happy either, so.
We'll be asking where the US public lost touch with both candidates, or vice versa, and how Trump was able to capitalize on it. And we'll be asking whether the current trend of political upsets from the right is the shape of things to come globally. That's coming up on Midori House on Monocle 24 right now. And welcome to the show. My guests today are Michael Goldfarb, the journalist, author and broadcaster, and Tom Rivers, ABC Radio London News correspondent. Welcome both. Before we begin the debate of the what's and the why's and the how's in the wide world of sports, we sent our New York researcher Clarissa Farr to gauge the mood of voters waking up to the idea of Donald Trump as President of the United States. Here is a little of what they had to say.
Oh my God, I woke up and I saw the results on my phone, and it's just heartbreaking. He's racist. He's just, you know, he disrespects women. I mean, it's heartbreaking. I just want this world to be a better world. Like, I just hope some of the right things that he said, he goes by his word, you know? That's all I hope for.
At the end of the day, we're all humans, and I think if we give him a chance, he'll do something good. Let's see what happens.
Trump is a complex person. Over the campaign, he's shown some very disturbing personality traits. You know, it is possible that he can be guided to put those aside and be a wise leader, but the precedents that he's shown us are not encouraging.
I really didn't think Donald Trump was going to win. I didn't think much of the support didn't go towards him, but at the same time, I really didn't care because both of the candidates weren't that positive to me. Hillary, she just said stuff that we wanted to hear. But at the same time, she had a little bit of a background. But Donald Trump just said whatever he felt like. But at the same time, he didn't have much of ideas. Even if Hillary won, I wasn't happy either. So that's all.
Our New York bureau chief, Ed Stocker, joins us now to tell us about the mood there currently. Ed, what have you been seeing today?
Well, I don't know if it was in my head, but I, you know, getting the subway this morning, everyone's looking pretty ashen-faced, you know. As I say, I don't know if that's just me kind of projecting my own mood onto everyone else, but I think it feels like the city's kind of in shock. You know, this is, as I've said before, a kind of liberal bastion in the US. It largely votes left of center, so I think shock and disbelief that this has happened. At the same time, certainly yesterday, and probably we'll see it later on today, I think Donald Trump supporters who felt kind of chastised in New York City, they didn't really feel that they could be kind of out and open about voting for Trump, feel kind of vindicated. So I expect we'll see a bit more of a presence from them later today. There are a couple of anti-Trump rallies, I've been told, scheduled later today, one in Columbus Circle and one at Union Square this afternoon, one at 4:30 p.m. local time, one at 6 p.m. So we'll have to see how many people turn out for that, and if there's any sort of, I guess, unrest or people wanting to get out there and voice their discontent at what has happened, Andrew.
Ed Stocker in New York, thank you for joining us. And we'll come back now to our studio here in London with Tom Rivers and Michael Goldfarb. It's a phrase I'm still trying to get used to saying. I'm not quite certain I ever thought I would be saying it for real, but here we are. President-elect Donald J. Trump. Michael, first of all.
Oh, you're going to have to let me free associate. I was in Ohio in June to make a documentary about independent voters who aren't all that independent. They tend to lean one way or another, frankly. And I found my way to a cafe in on the east side of Cleveland, and I was talking to this businessman who was developing some old warehouses, trying to create an artist's quarters in that once great manufacturing city, which is, you know, 50% fewer people living there than when I was a kid. And his father had run the Cuyahoga County, that's where Cleveland is located, Democratic machine for decades. He grew up in the party. He was all in for Trump. And I said, what's going on with that man? And he said, well, look, you know why he's going to win? I said, why? He said, because we live in a Kardashian world, man, and he's the Kardashian candidate. And I think that, you know, everybody's sense of disbelief, I think, comes from the idea that, you know, we think that most people, probably like people listening to this program or listening to it as a podcast, you know the difference between reality television and reality. But in fact, over the decades, it's become so ubiquitous, not just reality television, but just the other world, that people can no longer make a distinction. And they look at Donald Trump and they see star, they see guy, they see, you know, they don't even know that the whole program is faked and edited to look more dramatic than it is. And I think that there's an element that we all have to get used to, that we live in a mediatized world where media shapes us in ways that we're only just beginning to understand. And certainly that pollsters have no bloody idea how media shapes us.
Tom, on that thought, and this is where I should acknowledge up front, regular listeners will already be well aware of this, but I have been utterly and entirely wrong in my judgments of Donald Trump's probable fortunes absolutely every step of the way. I've been expecting him to flame out in a ball of indignity since pretty much 5 minutes after he announced he was running. I have been completely, utterly, 100% flat wrong. I am scarcely alone in that, which is hardly any consolation. But the thought that occurred to me, and it's just following up from what Michael was saying there, Tom, is it possible that Donald Trump actually understands the media better than the media understands itself?
I think he dialed into this seam of anger that, for whatever reason, the methodology is not in the pollsters' equations. And that goes back, as Michael says, goes back decades. And from what you're describing in Ohio, I saw the same thing. I originally come from northeastern Minnesota, iron mining area. It is traditionally union card area, boom or bust. From there to the steel mines, to the steel plants and to the car factories, et cetera, et cetera. There is so much anger that these people feel that they've been fobbed off by Democrats, by Republicans, decade in, decade out. But this was the culmination of their quote-unquote revolution.
But when you say fobbed off, what this response is, do they perceive this as a constructive vote for a possible solution to their problems, or is this just saying, screw it, I can't win this game, so I'm throwing the table over?
Well, I think it's more they were asked, in essence, if you like the last 8 years, are you going to hold on what they perceive to be a lousy hand? And this time they said, no, I'm folding, I'm going to get another hand.
I think one of the really interesting things that Tom was on... Tom and I were talking about this before we came on the air, is, you know, when I went to, I keep coming back to Ohio, it was eye-opening to me. I went to college in Ohio decades ago, a long time ago. And I, you know, there are so many buildings standing like ruins from the Roman Forum. I mean, people who've never been to the Great Lakes area, to the what they call the Rust Belt, have no idea what it's like to watch, you know, ruins created, ruins of a civilization as they emerge. And, you know, the deprivation, economic, social, educational deprivation that exists in these once great manufacturing places. Now, let's be clear, a lot of people split. They split in the 70s, they split in the 80s. Every time there was a new wave of either, you know, bad economic news, new robotics, factories shut down. People, this is America. You don't get to sit too much. You have to go somewhere else and get a job, and people do. But not everyone gets to go. Areas of deprivation that in the 60s and 70s, America looked at these areas of deprivation in the inner cities, and the federal government chucked all kinds of poverty money at them. And in an attempt to do inner city renovation, they knocked down blocks that had been gutted and burned out. They put in new housing, threw money at education. And these places in Ohio, in Minnesota, which at the very last minute is finally declared for Hillary Clinton, the only, right? Am I right?
Yeah, we're about, last I checked, it was about 45,000. And it is, I mean, that is like Massachusetts. It is a traditionally Democratic blue state.
It shouldn't have taken a whole day to count that vote.
No.
You know, Michigan went to Trump. Ohio went to Trump. Pennsylvania, where I was last month, went to Trump. And the areas, people say, oh my God, these rural areas, they're all coming out in droves to vote for Trump. They are as deprived and starved of investment as the inner cities were in the 60s and 70s. And the fact is, these people say, hey, they got all the good stuff and we got nothing. And so they voted for Trump.
But do you perceive that vote from your experiences of the region as, it's the same question I just asked Tom, do you perceive that the vote for Trump, as far as these people saw it, was a vote for a constructive, promising, plausible alternative, a possible solution to their problems, or was it the same thing? Is it more in the manner of just a nihilist tantrum?
I think to a degree, there's an element of cynicism and nihilism. I don't think a lot of people have great hope, but you know, there are other trends in there as well. I mean, not so much in Minnesota, but in Western Pennsylvania, it's a very Catholic area, and the abortion issue is a very strong issue, and they were legacy Democrats because they were all trade union members, and now the trade unions have no power and no reach, so they come over to the Republican side. I'd have to go back and ask them, which is something that so few journalists bother to do.
Well, it's something that so few news organizations will pay their journalists to do.
Well, that's also part of it.
In my general experience, and you two would both agree with me, journalists require very little encouragement to get out into the field and actually do reporting. It's just finding the organizations in this day and age that will actually pay you to do that and cover your expenses while you're doing it. I think that has been a big part of what's gone missing here. We should talk a bit more about the way the two candidates have reacted to a result that I suspect neither of them expected. Certainly one of them didn't. This is what the president-elect and the defeated candidate had to say earlier.
Now it's time for America to bind the wounds of division. To all Republicans and Democrats and independents across this nation, I say it is time for us to come together as one united people. I pledge to every citizen of our land that I will be president for all Americans. It's been what they call a historic event, but to be really historic, we have to do a great job. And I promise you that I will not let you down. We will do a great job. We will do a great job.
This is not the outcome we wanted or we worked so hard for. And I'm sorry that we did not win this election for the values we share and the vision we hold for our country. This is painful, and it will be for a long time. Donald Trump is going to be our president. We owe him an open mind and the chance to lead. I am incredibly honored and grateful to have had this chance to represent all of you in this consequential election. May God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
Two voices which at this stage require no back announcement. Tom, what did you make of Donald Trump's speech? That was the first time he sounded like a grown-up for 18 months. Did we learn, is there, and this is possibly me trying to be optimistic, is there possibly an inclination there that what he has done for 18 months has been a construct, that he's known exactly what he was doing, that he would put on a show, a great television spectacle, which he does know something about creating, that would win him the presidency, and having now won it, he will function as probably a not terribly disruptive middle-of-the-road Republican president?
Well, he said the right things, didn't he? He said, I'm going to be the president for everybody. And he's saying the right things about unity, and we all have to get together. Again, as Michael and I both found, America is so polarized. And this is not going to be, it's not a sporting event, and you shake hands after 90 minutes and say, good contest, wasn't that great? There is some deep, deep-seated anger out there, and I guess it will eventually fade, but we're not there yet. And it's gonna, Hillary said, look, this is going to hurt her personally for a long time. But the supporters out there, and you heard it with your correspondent in New York, people out there that voted for Hillary are feeling the blues, and they're going to feel them for a while. But we'll see as he builds his team, and you know, things really get rolling 2 months out. But you got to build 4,000 posts he's got to fill, and it's going to happen really, really quick.
You know, the interesting thing, and listeners should understand this, is that Hillary actually got more votes than Donald Trump. Not a lot more votes, but she got more votes. About 100 and, I don't know, last I looked, about 150,000, 170,000.
Yeah.
Out of what was it?
140 million, 140 whatever.
Million, whatever. Like, yeah. I mean, a little less than 140 right. million votes.
Neither of them got anywhere near as many votes as people who couldn't be bothered.
Well, exactly. But it's important to understand the extraordinary division in the country, in the electorate. Let's say the people who bother to do their citizenly duty and come out and vote, they get a gold star for being bothered to do it.
And how many, Michael, were saying, I don't like either, but I have to choose one or the other?
Virtually everyone I spoke to, including, you know, except for one small businessman in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, 32, but, you know, he's staying in town. And, you know, he was aware of Trump's fault. But he said to me, you know, I don't care. I said, but he's so lewd. He says these, he's a church-going boy. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. You grab him by the whatever. You know, come on, man. And he said, well, look, you know, 4 years ago, the Republicans went for the Hollywood casting dream of what a presidential candidate or what a president should look like. Mitt Romney, tall, great hair, handsome, rock-jawed, and he was a dreadful candidate. They said, well, let's go. Why not try the guy who has absolutely no business doing it and see what happens? And this is what happened. But the country is divided. Unfortunately, and this is a... we have to touch on the fact that the Republicans took the Senate because Hillary offered no coattails. Mm-hmm. Her, you know, she got 100,000 more votes. She needed to get a couple of million more votes to pull the Senate to the Democrats. And there's a long bill that wants to be collected by the hard right in America. And I think he may want to rule for everyone. Mm-hmm. But when those bills start coming in, overturning Roe v. Wade, deregulation, all kinds of stuff.
I think, though, they are mindful of the anger over their shoulder, and they're gonna give him a longer honeymoon than certainly Hillary would have had. They've got both houses, and yes, there will be those issues that you raise, but they're not going to be raised on day one.
Okay, we're going to take a short break now. You're listening to Midori House here with me, Andrew Muller, along with Michael Goldfarb and Tom Rivers. Coming up next, more on the only story in the world today.
The Entrepreneurs is Monocle's weekly tour of the best companies, cleverest minds, and most visionary ideas in global business.
Genius is that little spark that makes us different from anybody that ever lived and anybody that ever will live.
From fashion to food, timepieces to tech, we shine light on the movers and shakers shaping the future of industry and commerce.
How do we continue to let companies grow, to enhance research, but at the same time, make good decisions, make ethical decisions when we are in this world of uncertainty?
Tune in to hear how some of the smartest names in business got their start, where they went wrong, and how they turned it all around.
My goal was to brew the best ever Indian beer. Never sold a bottle of beer in my life, but that was my mission.
That's The Entrepreneurs, every Wednesday at 1900 hours London time, right here on Monocle 24.
You're listening to Midori House with me, Andrew Muller. Still with me are Michael Goldfarb and Tom Rivers. And still under discussion is, of course, the election of Donald Trump to the presidency of the United States. This is the bit where I think we have to acknowledge that we are three white guys about to discuss the degree to which prejudice against people who aren't white guys may have informed or encouraged some of the Trump vote. Because it strikes me that whatever other reasons people may have had for voting for him. Nobody can have been in any illusion about what he said about women, about Mexicans, about, we don't need to go through the list again, about pretty much everybody who isn't a straight white guy you can think of. Is every vote for Trump, therefore, should it be counted, I'll ask you first, Michael, as an endorsement of those views?
No. And I think one of the big mistakes people who want to push back against Trump and try to organize as best they can against this overwhelming victory and the fact that the levers of government are so thoroughly in the Republican Party's hands, is if they get lost in the thickets of identity and gender politics, they will never, ever be able to push back.
It's not getting lost in the thickets of identity politics to point out that Donald Trump is a racist or has said racist things, has said and done deeply misogynist things. These are all fairly unarguable.
I think, look, that's true, and some of his support. It would have been jolly nice. Did I say jolly nice?
You did. You've lived here too long, Michael.
I'm sorry. I really apologize to the listeners. Look, it really would have been nice if back in the summer when David Duke, former head of the Ku Klux Klan, said, Donald Trump's a man we can do business with, if Trump had immediately said, thank you, but no thank you. But he needed that. And his chief campaign manager, Steve Bannon, runs Breitbart News. He's all into that. And you have to acknowledge it. But the thing is that it's multi-layered, isn't it, Tom?
It's multi-layered, and I think there are facets. There are certainly parts of the pie that would ascribe to some of those positions, but I think the big card really is economics. So we discussed in the first half, and I think most people ultimately it's the economy, stupid, and this was the economic revolution, irregardless of gender, race, or
really?
Any other. I do believe.
You think people are voting for a billionaire New York property developer with no experience in government, no previous record at all of taking any interest whatsoever in people less fortunate than himself?
I think that they're seeing him, as I said before, as the change agent in whatever he comes with to the table. Be that as it may, I think they say this is their opportunity to change. And if they want to ascribe to the cell line that Trump has been using, if they want to see that swamp drained, this is the person that they believe can actually do that.
Because, I don't know, this is a line I think a lot of people, I understand why, are taking refuge in, that people are voting for Donald Trump or have voted for Donald Trump or indeed have elected Donald Trump despite the fact that he is a bully and a bigot and an oaf and a misogynist and a racist. Don't we have to consider the possibility of how many people voted for him because of those things?
Yes, but
how do you tease out those numbers? I don't know.
I mean, you'd have to do a lot better. I mean, there's a very interesting thing. Peter Thiel, who, you know, is the multi-billionaire godfather of investment capital in Silicon Valley. He's a libertarian. He's an out gay man. He's destroyed another out gay man's publication over the fact that Gawker revealed that Peter Thiel was gay, which everybody knew anyway. He said it best, actually. He put $1 million down on Trump winning. And he said that people don't understand that his voters don't hear him as serious. They don't. They come from a world of harsh language. The first time Trump said, I don't speak politically correct, I knew that this guy was actually on to something. And this was back in January. And he was saying really appalling things. But I know that there's a vast world out there of people say, yeah, it's just words. You know, so what? I respect my wife. You can't talk to my woman that way. But if a guy is down in the locker room.
Some of my best friends are.
But that's the way the world works. And unfortunately, you know, you can police language as much as you like. And I don't know. I mean, look, in a lot of these rural areas, there aren't any minorities around. They're just a rumor that they hear about through Rush Limbaugh on the radio. I don't know.
That's a reflection of what we saw here with Brexit, that the people who voted most earnestly against stopping immigration were people who'd never actually seen an immigrant.
Exactly. And so, yes, of course there's racism. And yes, I mean, the obvious thing to say about America is that its original sin is race. It has never yet been redeemed, even with Barack Obama in the White House for two terms. It is what it is. And the question is, you know, how do you deal with that? Do you accept that? I mean, I there was a whole bunch of stuff about, oh, his last commercial was anti-Semitic. And because it referred to George Soros as these, you know, it would have been anti-Semitic if they said shadowy billionaires and not shown a picture of George Soros. I mean, liberals will show you pictures of the Koch brothers every day and say, look at how many billions they give to fund these nefarious right-wing causes. Mm-hmm. Well, George Soros gives billions every year to fund liberal left-leaning court. I mean, what are you supposed to say about that? You can't say, oh, but George Soros is Jewish. You can't. You know, people hate Goldman Sachs. Matt Taibbi wrote that Goldman Sachs is a, you know, vampire squid.
The vampire squid, yeah.
You know, and everyone said, yeah, Matt Taibbi, right on. Rolling Stone, we're with you. And Trump said Goldman Sachs is a vampire squid in so many words, and had a picture of Lloyd Blankfein, who's the chairman of Goldman Sachs. Well, I mean, he's Jewish. What are you supposed to do about that? That's not anti-Semitism. Yeah, he's got all kinds of people who are complete racists, violent racists, hate women, who voted for him. But that doesn't mean the entire crew of people who voted for him can be tarred with that brush. I don't understand that. Yeah, Tom?
The sheer numbers. I mean, you look at the wave across the nation, and people are worried and concerned about their mortgages, their rent, whatever. And I think that is first and foremost the most important issue, followed by, I guess, by terrorism was listed as number two.
You've got more chance of getting struck by lightning.
Well, exactly. Three was foreign affairs, and there's a whole litany of stories we can talk about there. And then immigration came in fourth.
Michael, I guess do we have to, is the Trump phenomenon a peculiarly American occurrence tied really to nothing else, or do we have to look at it in light of what is happening elsewhere in Europe, here in Britain, etc.?
I think you have to do that. I think you have to look. There's clearly Davos man and woman, because I don't want to be accused of misogyny or sexism. Davos people have the international nomenclatura have completely missed out on the fact that since 2008, whatever recovery there has been very patchy, that at the same time, the people who caused the crash got away with it. And in the third place, in Europe, there's been an increased pressure of immigration coming out of the Middle East. And you put all those things together, and you end up with people like Viktor Orban. You know, all politics is local, and there are local Hungarian reasons why he was elected. But, you know, he's an authoritarian, blood and soil nativist. Marine Le Pen, who you now have to put very serious money on as getting into the second round of next year's presidential election in France.
At least.
And quite possibly, I mean, she's rebranded the National Front. And I find her a very formidable, my limited French. When I've heard her interviewed, I say, you know, this is someone who actually has a way of speaking that is unlike her father's, and she is credible.
The times they are changing, and we're living through this living history. And we are really, not only in the U.S., but as you say, in a number of countries throughout Europe, we're seeing a wave of change, and it's not over. And then exactly, the elections next year in France are going to be fascinating to watch.
And I suspect over the coming weeks and months, we are not going to be short of conversation on this and other Monocle 24 programs. Tom Rivers and Michael Goldfarb, thank you both very much for joining me on today's special edition of Midori House. It was produced by Tom Hall, researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco and Daphne Carnesis. Our studio manager was Kieran Matthew Banerjee. There's music next at 1900. It's The Entrepreneurs with Daniel Giacopelli. More on the day's unfolding events later on The Daily at 2200. I'm back with Midori House at the same time tomorrow, 1800 London time. But for now, I'm Andrew Muller. Thanks very much for listening, and goodbye.